This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. Yes, again, I am Rob Coulter, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. Just a reminder to everyone out there, you are able to follow along on the social media platforms of Instagram and Twitter or X, depending on how up-to-date you are with things, using the handle at Talking Split. And a final reminder that you can leave a rating and review for us on any of the platforms. That would be fantastic to help share the podcast with as many people out there as we possibly can. Yet another special guest in for the podcast this week. So joined by newly appointed Basketball Victoria Child Safety Officer, Sarah Wallach. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problems at all. This is a topic that I feel like comes around about this time of year every year as we go through all the having to sign forms to be able to coach and working with children checks and all those types of things come up. And I think most coaches would get to this point and groan a little bit and go, oh, this again. And that's not what this is supposed to be. We're not trying to hit you with a hammer or anything like that about what you can and can't do, those types of things. But we are really about trying to make the sport safer for everyone. And as coaches, we obviously deal with children a lot. So that's kind of the path we're going down, as the things that you just need to be mindful of as a coach. There, you know, we talk about it a lot that for kids first entering the sport, the first interaction they're probably going to have is going to be with their coach. That's the really important, before they've even tried on a uniform, met the team manager, met their teammates, it's going to be the coach straight away. So we're really conscious that as coaches that we need to make the experience an enjoyable one for our players to make sure that they stay in the sport. That's a really big thing. But the new safeguarding rules and requirements, I suppose, have come out. Sarah, what are the things that, I mean, why is it there, I suppose, is the reason behind it?
Yeah, so the child safety standards are there out of the Royal Commission into child sexual abuse, and the way that institutions responded to that and maybe didn't deal with abuse as it happened at the time. So now Victoria has legislation that says, that clearly says the way that we need to respond to complaints and concerns when they're raised.
Yeah, and that's the coach, you have to be across it, essentially. I know growing up, and this is not to bag on any of my coaches growing up when I was a player and those types of things, I look at how they used to coach versus what goes on now, and they're very, very different times that we live in, of course, and very different levels of acceptability, I think, is really important. So just being mindful of what can happen. There's a copy of the requirements on the Basketball Victoria website, is that
yeah.
right?
Yep, there's a link to the standards on yep. the website, and people can also contact me too if they have questions.
Absolutely, and we'll put Sarah's details in the description of this podcast as well, and a link to the website, and they are constantly being updated as well. Like, it's not just a standing document and that's the rule. Like, how often do these things get updated?
The standards would get reviewed every year, and we've just also put a lot of documents for young people, so young people and families can access documents on our website now as well about the way that they can raise concerns or give us feedback, make complaints, and also what safety looks like for young people and families in basketball.
Absolutely. So one of the areas is cultural safety, that is a really important part, in particular for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, children and families. Can you give us a little bit of background as to that and what it should really look like?
Yeah, so that's standard number one in the Victorian standards, and so that's a really important one. And cultural safety, that, you know, it's so broad, isn't it? But it's about welcoming and making Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander young people and families welcome in stadiums, welcome in your teams, in your clubs. So, you know, from the get-go, you know, if a family walk in, do you have Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander family flags in your stadiums? Do you have an acknowledgement plaque, you know, as you walk in the door, that kind of thing? And it's also about talking to families, making them feel comfortable, you know, having that kind of sense of belonging that, you know, that's what sport is about anyway, isn't it?
Absolutely. And yeah. I mean, there are so many families out there that potentially have that cultural heritage that we just wouldn't know about it. Is there a good way to maybe approach that even? Like, how do you start that conversation?
I think that, you know, like things like celebrating NAIDOC week, like I was at Knox here during NAIDOC week and watching the Raiders and, you know, they played the national anthem in an Aboriginal language that was so, it was beautiful and, you know, they had a speaker at halftime and they had dancers and, you know, they really embraced NAIDOC week and, you know, celebrating that and making people feel comfortable about talking about their culture. I think addressing racism absolutely is so important as well. Yep. You know, so making reports when, like, you know, if there's incidences of racial abuse, making sure that they're reported and dealt with appropriately and in a culturally safe way as well.
Yeah, and that's a big part. I mean, we want all families to feel safe, effectively. Yes. Like, we want sport to be the safest place because for a lot of people, this is their outlet, I suppose. Like they have enough problems going on in with work life and potentially families and those types of things. When they come to sport, we want it to be as happy a place as possible. So the cultural safety around that space, when we never know really what anyone else is going through away from the sport. Like we, you know, and I think as coaches, and I'd certainly do this, it's like, oh, this player just wasn't very good tonight. But you don't realise they may have been going through exams or they've had some family things going on and those types of things. Just having that little bit of understanding, I think, can go a really long way.
Yeah, I know at the start of the season, all of the coaches that my son has just had a general conversation with all the parents about, you know, if there's anything that I should know about your child, if there's anything that I should know about your family, come to me, you know, I'm really open to talking about that. You know, if they've had a really stressful day at school, if they've had something happen during the week, let me know, you know, because if that's going to impact on their game or, you know, if they need some extra support, you know, the coach, you know, a positive coach can make an amazing difference on children's lives, can't they?
It really does. And like, I'd like to think I've always been a positive coach, but there are probably some players out there that maybe don't have that experience with me. And I know having to try and pick players up after they've had potentially a year of a coach where they haven't quite connected with or it hasn't been the experience they wanted is such a hard process that it doesn't usually get fixed within one season. Like one bad season can actually equate to probably 3 or 4 years of not turmoil but difficulties, yeah. I suppose, in that space. So as coaches we've got to do more. Yeah. I feel like that's probably the big thing.
It impacts their confidence. It, you know, and imagine they're the young people that have come back, you know.
Yeah, true.
There's young people that would have a negative experience with their coach and just not want to come back to basketball too. So yeah.
No, it makes sense. And you are in a unique position, as you said. You've got family that play basketball as well. So you probably see this from a number of different angles as to you wear the parent hat at times, but you also wear the BV hat at various stages too. And it's a difficult spot to be in. So how can families be more aware of what safety looks like for their children?
Yeah, there's information on the BV website about that. And there's also a Play by the Rules campaign at the moment that is directly asking parents to, you know, become more involved in, you know, speaking up about safety. It's encouraging associations and clubs to really engage families and be open to feedback, because I think sometimes what happens is, you know, families are concerned about raising you know, issues that they have because they're, you know, whether it's real or not, you know, they feel like that could impact their child's basketball, you know,
yep.
You know, team selection, all of that kind of thing, you know, and parents have that concern. And even in the, you know, few months that I've worked here, I've had lots of parents that ring me and say, you know, I really want to raise this, but I'm really scared that, you know, it'll impact on my child's next season selection. And, you know, so I think as a sport, we need to really reassure parents that that's not the case, that, you know, you can give us feedback, you can raise concerns as they happen, and, you know, that they'll be addressed appropriately.
Yep. So what does good practice look like, I suppose, in that space? So if there is a family that does have a concern, where do they go first? Do they go through their club or association? Do they come directly to BV? What do the associations need to have in place in terms of, say, a process or a child safety officer? What does it look like there?
Yeah, so all clubs and associations should have child safety officers, and it's important that families know that they're the first point of call. So, you know, whether you have that person's contact details, even a photo of that person, whether, you know, your child safety officer is someone who's around a lot of games and training sessions, so families just get to know them. And, you know, you can encourage families by saying, you know, you can give positive feedback as well. You know, that's really good, and that's really nice to hear too. You know, it's really, you know, often we only hear the complaints, and it's really nice to hear when, you know, a coach has, you know, had a particularly good impact on a child, and, you know, for the family to come and go, you know, we've really enjoyed having that coach this season.
We spoke a little bit about sort of the changing of how we coach in particular. I know, obviously, I deliver a lot of coaching courses, so I'm really conscious on what I tell coaches they can and can't do, and I'm fairly explicit whether there should be really no physical contact with players on my end. So I know as I was growing up, it would be nothing for a coach to grab me by the arm and move me to a spot that they wanted me to be in. Obviously, we can't do that. I think every now and again, you're probably going to fall into the habit of, oh, I've done this for 20-odd years and those types of things. Is there a good way to sort of go about almost retraining yourself to not do that?
I think just, I'm not sure about the retraining, because that's probably your department.
Probably true.
But I just think being really mindful, of, you know, maybe a high five is, you know, okay, but, you know, never in, never when you're feeling frustrated, never when you're feeling angry, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, it's just like, I think it's just being mindful, isn't it? That it's just, it's not necessary, really, like it shouldn't be necessary. And, you know, there's lots of children who are really sensitive to other people touching them. And, you know, they have so much education now from families and schools about, you know, not letting adults touch you, not letting other people, you know, having your safe body space and that kind of thing. So even children are more aware of it now too. So
yeah, most definitely. Yeah. And like coming from someone that coached under 18 girls last year, I was really conscious of it. Like the last thing I wanted to do was make them feel uncomfortable. And I must admit, I jumped in for an under 14 boys team just on the weekend and felt myself like slipping into the habit again. It's like, hey, I need you to go over there and just sort of tap the kid on the shoulder. It's like, oh, I wasn't supposed to do it. Like, how come I was good at it last year, but I hadn't really thought about it this year? But it's that kind of thing that it is a little bit of a habit. And I think as coaches, we need to find different ways to do it. Like if we want someone to stand somewhere, we don't grab them by the arm and we don't move them to that spot. Mm. We go and put a cone there. And it's like, hey, go and stand next to the cone. Or if we're trying to teach shooting as an example, we don't grab them by the elbow and say, this needs to be over here. Like there are other ways that we can do it. We can describe it. We can sort of trace the air with their finger and say, hey, move that to where this is, or you need to get your elbow to this point here, and have them do it differently. And that's the thing. Like, find out what's comfortable for your players too, I suppose, is a big part of it. And we're going way back now. I had a player that I coached that was really uncomfortable with any form of physical contact. Like, and that didn't matter if it was another player, if it was a coach, or whatever the case may be. Once he felt comfortable with the people around, he was okay with it. So he had no problems at our training sessions. Like, he would bash into kids and all that sort of stuff, no problems. But any time we'd come up against someone that he didn't know, he was really sort of shy and not wanting to go near them, which didn't go fantastically defensively, I must admit. But it was something that I didn't know about at the start. And it was only about halfway through the season that parents came to me and said, oh, actually, this is, you know, what this child deals with. And it's like, well, okay, now I can make some adjustments to how we deliver content, what we do in that space as well. But I think it's the more you can have that conversation with the parents just to find out. Like, what would how do you broach that with a parent, I suppose? Do you just put it out there at the start of the season with just, hey, any comments or things I need to know of, just let me know? Or do you try and do it publicly or privately? Is there a best way that you've seen?
I think at the start of the season, addressing all parents, so then you're not singling out kids.
Yep.
And you're also letting them know that they can come to you, and, you know, that it's okay to have those conversations. And then I guess if you have concerns throughout the season, then it's absolutely, like, it's better to ask parents, isn't it, than to have that kind of where you're not sure you're doing the right thing, you know, you're not sure if the child's feeling comfortable. It's much better to have those conversations, but I'd always have those conversations with the parents, you know, and I'd have it, you know, if it's that you've got concerns about a child, I'd have it privately with the parent. And then, you know, if you all think that it's okay to sit down and have that conversation with the child involved as well, then
Does it change going through the age groups? I mean, obviously, you'd be more comfortable having a conversation with an under-18 player than you would maybe an under-12 player who may not quite have the same capacity for sort of learning and knowledge and those types of things? Or like, is there an age where you'd stop involving the parent?
From my opinion, yep. coming from child safeguarding perspective, yep. I would say 18 is yep. the time. I would say any age below that, I would always involve. And of course, you're going to have times when, you know, you're speaking to the player on the side yep. lines and, you know, the parent's not there. But if you're going to be having a conversation that's a difficult conversation or that could be emotionally challenging, I would always include the parent.
Yep. So yeah. There's a lot of protecting the athlete that we've spoken about to this point, but it's also about protecting the coach and making sure that they feel comfortable and safe in that space. Yeah. One of the areas that gets brought up continually, and every person I talk to and every coach I talk to, is child transportation in particular. So the parents ring up and say, hey, we can't get them to practice tonight. Can you pick them up as the coach? And those types of things. Is there any advice you can give to coaches around what's acceptable, how you would manage it, those types of things?
Yeah. So I want to start this conversation by saying we never want to get to a point where a child or a young person can't play basketball, because our rules are so tight that it makes it impossible for them to get to games and training, because we know that a lot of young people can only play basketball because, you know, their teammates' parents can drive them or their coach can drive them, and we don't want to stop that. But there are definitely things that you can put in place that keeps children more safe. Yeah. So that's things like, you know, getting parent permission, and that can be at the start of the season. If you know that every Friday night that you don't have a home game, that young person will need to be transported by someone from your association, then, you know, you can get them to sign a form at the start of the season, and that can be permission for the whole season. And then it's just about you letting the parent know, you know, who's taking your child, where they're going, so what stadium, what time, you know, they'll be picked up. And best practice is not to have an adult and a child alone in the car, and having the child sit in the back seat rather yep. than the front seat. Yeah.
yeah.
And if possible, you know, like a lot of the times families will know each other. So a lot of the times, you know, that young person can go with their mate and, you know, their family. But if that's not possible and it is the coach that's transporting, you know, it's, yeah, best practice not to be alone with the child in the car, and definitely have the child in the back seat.
Yeah, and it's fairly timely one, because it happened maybe 2 weeks ago. I think I was standing about 10 feet from you when the text message came through to another coach I was talking to that said, I've got to give a walkover tonight and I've only got 4 kids because one of the kids has pulled out because he can't get there. Yes. And that straight away is like, oh, how do we deal with this? What's the story? As it turns out, ended up getting a lift with another family, which was great. So managed to get to the game. They managed to play the game, which is a massive win in the first place. The child hasn't missed out, so fantastic there. The team's been able to play, because it's not just one child that misses out on a walkover. It's the other 4 as well that will potentially miss out. But it was a conversation around, well, okay, if that family can't take them home, how are they going to get back?
Yeah.
And if it's going to be you, that's fine, but see if you can put some things in place, exactly like you're talking about, like child in the back seat, those types of things.
Yeah, letting someone from your association or your club know that yeah. you're transporting, as well as the parents. Yeah,
yep.
That's another big one too.
Yep. Why is that so important?
Just for transparency, yep. you know, so it doesn't look like that's as much to protect the coach or whoever's, you know, transporting the child as it is to protect the child, because then, you know, you're not, it doesn't look like you're hiding anything. It can't be perceived that, you know, you're transporting children and no one knows where you're going, or, you know, that you're doing it.
Yep, no, it makes a lot of sense. And one of the big areas we have issue with is obviously training will finish, the parents aren't there yet. Coaches, what do they have to do?
Yeah.
You got to stay.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just bail and say, hey, catch you later. Yeah. You've got to stick around with them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
And it's, I mean, it probably changes a little bit, I suppose, depending on the venue. Like, if you were at a random school off to the side and there's literally nobody else around, you absolutely have to stay. But if it's a night where, you know, there are multiple teams training after you, there are going to be parents and people around, is there a position where you maybe can leave them behind, or do you definitely have to stay?
If you've called the parent, so I would
yep.
always say, you know, call the parent.
Yep.
You know, are they running 20 minutes late? Are they happy for you to, you know, talk to the coach who's on the next, you know, whose training session is next, and just have them sit on the bench, you know? But yeah, I'd always try and contact the parent, and I'd always let other people know in the stadium, or, you know,
yep.
yeah, No, the director of coaching's, you know, often at the training, let them know that, you know, whoever it is hasn't been picked up, their parents are coming, they're just running late.
Yep. Yeah. No, it makes sense. And, I mean, I had it a couple of times last season where the parents were late getting there and we'd finished training at, say, 9, 9.30 or somewhere around there at a school that's a single court venue that obviously isn't sticking around. And it's like, well, when are the parents getting here? Who's picking them up? Mm-hmm. You got to stick around with them. And there were a couple of times where the kid would just say, oh, mum and dad aren't coming, I'll just grab an Uber. It's like, this is no better. Like, no. You may as well jump in with me. Like, if you're going to do this where it's someone that you don't know completely, you may as well jump in the back seat and I'll take you to where you need to get to in that space. Yeah. So we do have to be a little bit mindful. But in that sort of situation, like, I think it happened once where I said, no, we're not throwing you in an Uber and just hoping for the best. Like, you'll come with me, but can you be on the phone to your parents the whole time as we're driving back? And just, I don't care what you're talking about. I'm not going to listen anyway. So, just do whatever you want to do. Just to, again, it covers yourself as the coach. Like, it doesn't look like you're trying to hide things, as you sort of say. Yeah. You're being as transparent as possible, but you're still helping out families because we know basketball is not always the easiest place to get to. There are plenty of times where you're doing an hour's worth of driving to a game to play the game, to do an hour's worth of driving back. Yeah. That comes with a cost. I think financially, time, all those types of things. If we can find ways to make it easier, all the more better.
Yeah.
And families that carpool in particular, I think it's such a better way to get just a little bit of social connection. Yes. Like, the kids will talk to each other a little bit more. Like, it's, you know, the parents can talk and do their thing, but the kids generally won't shut up for probably an hour of driving. They'll just continue to go the whole time.
Yeah.
It's actually a good thing.
Yeah. They're bonding.
Exactly. Yeah. So I kind of like the idea around that. The social aspect, I suppose, of coaching as well. There'll be times where you'll have, say, team dinners or breakups or functions or whatever the case may be. How do coaches need to act, I suppose, in those situations? Like, what is being socially responsible around players? Because you don't want to blur the lines as well between when are you their coach versus are you a friend of the player? Like, what are some of the things that the coaches sort of need to be cognizant of in that space?
Yeah, well, I think, always maintaining your boundaries, because you are a coach, you're in a position of power and authority. And, you need to be responsible.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think in those, you know, it's fine. Like, it's great. You know, the kids love those, like, end of season breakups. They love the team dinners. You know, if you've been, you know, an hour away and, you know, everyone needs dinner after, you get together. And, it's again, about having other adults around you. So having your assistant coaches, your parents around as well. It's about, you know, letting someone from the association know that, you know, that's what you're doing, that you're having a team building day, and being transparent and just acting appropriately, you know. So obviously not drinking alcohol when you're with young people. Your conversations, you know, are age appropriate, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, is that I think you can sometimes slip into almost too casual a mode when you go to some of the functions, where it's like, these are now my social circle. Rather than that player-coach relationship still needs to exist in those spaces. Yeah. And just making sure, exactly as you're talking about, like the use of alcohol and things like that.
Yeah.
No, just don't do it. The language you use, like the swearing and those types of things, can't be done in front of the kid. And just making sure that you do have some boundaries in there is really important, because I think there are some clubs out there that do a phenomenal job socially of keeping the actual association connected.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of it. You do want to be a part of something that's not just your team.
Yes.
And those social functions, and, you know, obviously we see it a fair bit with like Facebook groups and those types of things. It's great to see the kids all dressed up in something that they've decided, hey, tonight's going to be, you know, pink round, or, you know, we're going to have wee domestic jersey night or something like, oh, you're going to grab pizza afterwards as a group. They're actually really good things and really healthy things for people to be involved with, as long as they're done the right way.
Yes.
And that's the important part, is that the second someone starts feeling a little bit unsafe in that environment, that's when you got to revisit your practices a little bit in that space, I would suggest. The swearing, the body language, those types of things, what do coaches really need to be aware of? Or is there anything that you have seen that you think they can, and obviously don't swear is the real easy one on that.
Yeah,
But what else do coaches need to be aware of, just in terms of their communication with the players?
Yeah, even your body language is really important, isn't it? Because you don't want to make children feel frightened. You don't want them to be scared of you. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a complex one, isn't it? Because, you know, basketball, people get passionate, people get frustrated, but it's just about it's about managing your emotions as an adult so that they're not impacting, you know, because at the end of the day, basketball is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be an enjoyable experience, like winning or losing. And, you know, losing is a great opportunity to teach children how to lose well. And, yeah.
Yep. So things like that, the position when you talk to players is something I think coaches need to be really mindful of, is that you don't necessarily want to eyeball them like face to face. That can be really confronting for some of their players. Like if you could stand side by side so that you're both watching the game unfold or your training unfold as you're standing next to each other, that can be a lot less confronting for the players, even getting to their eye level so that you're not looking down at them where it's that really intimidating sort of feel. That's something that I think coaches can do. And if you're a short coach, well, congratulations, you've got this a lot easier.
you're looking up.
You tend to be looking up a lot of times. I've walked past an under 16 athlete that was comfortably taller than me the other day, and it's like, well, okay, I probably can't intimidate you at all. It'd go the other way, if anything. But if you are coaching those younger age groups, so the under 12s, under 14s, you are probably going to be physically taller than those athletes. If you're going to try and deliver a message to them, in particular if they happen to be sitting on a bench or something like that, standing over the top of them and talking down to them, that's going to be really confronting, for a lot of people. And there's really nowhere for them to go.
No.
Like they kind of have to meet your gaze, or they'll look away a little bit if they're uncomfortable. So just getting to their eye level where they do have a little bit of an out, they can look past you if they need to, or they can just almost disengage a little bit.
Yeah.
Just to the point where they don't feel like they're just being attacked.
Yes.
In that's really the key to it. Because I think as coaches, we still have to deliver feedback. Like that's part of the deal. It's got to be constructive feedback. It can't be just the whole, all positive all the time, because that doesn't really get anyone any better.
Yeah.
And it can't be all negative all the time, because again, one, it doesn't get them better, but two, they're going to walk away from it. They need to hear the positives. Yeah. But how can you frame it?
Yes.
I think is the really important part. So
yeah, and your tone of voice and not raising your voice. Like if you're feeling, you know, if you've just pulled a kid off the court because they've made a massive mistake, they're already feeling like rubbish, you know. If you go over there and you're, you know, yelling, that's not going to help them, you know. It's like, yeah, you calm yourself down, work out what you're going to say to them, and then deliver the really constructive feedback in a calm a way as possible.
Well, yeah, no, I think we've all been guilty maybe not being the calmest. But
yeah,
I mean,
parents on the sideline are the same too, you know.
Absolutely. Like, well, and part of it is parents might be embarrassed by their child's mistake, so they feel a little bit aggrieved by that. But I mean, I know one thing that I've recommended to coaches: if that situation does happen where a player makes an error, they have to come off the court, don't talk to them straight away.
Yes.
Let them get a drink, let them take a beat and sort of gather their thoughts, and then you can go and talk to them.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do that, ask them a question first. So rather than talk at them and say, you did A, B and C wrong, but you need to fix this, ask them the question, okay, what happened?
Yeah.
What did you feel? And it might be a really simple answer of, look, I knew I was supposed to pass it over there. I didn't think they were open, so I went the other way and it didn't work out. It's like, well, now that I know that as the coach, it's like, well, at least you haven't actively tried to go against what I've been trying to tell you to do in this space.
Yeah.
You now get a little bit of an understanding as to what they're going through as well. And I think that opens dialogue straight away, where now you have a better relationship with the player that you can talk to them a bit more.
Yes.
So I think that's a great way.
Yeah. Similar, and they'll take it in too. They'll take it in when you're having a conversation like that, rather than, you know, if they're feeling a bit nervous about what you might be saying or the way that you're delivering it.
Yep.
Yeah.
It can be really dangerous in that space. Running individual training sessions, because there's a lot of people out there that do one-on-one sessions and those types of things. What does the best practice look like in terms of how that would run effectively? So just say for argument's sake, we've got a one-court gym, there's nobody that trains before us or trains after us, and you've got a player in for a one-on-one session. What are some of the things that the coach has to be really mindful of in that space?
Yeah, well, obviously that you're potentially alone with a child. Like, yeah, I would encourage parents, you know, to stay if I was that coach, if possible. You know, I know that's not always possible, but again, it's like letting other people know that that's what you're doing. Yeah, let someone else from your club or your association know what you're doing. You know, if possible, having another coach running another session on the other half of the court, that kind of thing.
Yeah, just
it's being mindful.
Yeah,
and
just sort of closing the loop.
Yes, yeah.
Like it's, and I think a lot of this is common sense stuff. And I think a lot of it is genuinely things that coaches would probably already do. But it is something that now there are official rules in place that we have to be really mindful of. We don't want to break them.
Yes.
I suppose that's a horrible way of looking at it, but we do have to be really mindful in this space too, that, okay, there's a reason these rules are in place, because there's obviously been some findings come out where people potentially have done the wrong thing. And not necessarily saying basketball coaches or anything like that, but from all over the place, we have to be really mindful in that space. And those one-on-one sessions are a time where you interact fairly directly with a player. So you have to be careful about what you say and how you say it. You don't want to be inflammatory or defamatory in the words that you use and say, well, if you're doing a one-on-one session, but you don't necessarily coach that player normally, you don't want to say things like, oh, you know, I know your coach sucks and, you know, they wouldn't do this with you, so we're going to do this. That's not going to help anyone. That actually causes more problems because now you're putting doubt into a player's mind and you're being fairly insulting towards another coach. So those types of things, having a parent there, I think, is really important. Even just having a bit of a sit-down chat with the parent and the player at the start is to, look, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to do it. Here's the plan in place.
Yeah.
This is what we're working towards. If we get there or not, who knows? But just so that everyone's on the same page and there's no doubt about what's going on in that space.
And a lot of the time, you know, in the past, when children have been harmed, it's been because, you know, there was secretive behaviour. So there was behaviour that parents weren't aware of, or, you know, that clubs, associations weren't aware of, or that was swept under the carpet. So, yeah, a lot of it is just about open communication and being transparent.
Yep. So when you talk about open communication in particular, how can coaches contact players in particular? Like, are there things and rules around that that we do need to be really mindful of? And again, what does best practice look like in that space?
Yeah, so best practice looks like having online conversations. So, you know, through messenger apps like WhatsApp, where you can have multiple people in that conversation. You can have your assistant coach, you can have a parent, and you can have the player. You know, so everyone knows what you're saying to the young person, and that's it, you know, isn't it? It's like, have parents, you know, even if you've got a 16-year-old who, you know, you're trying to develop their independence, you know, even if that parent doesn't actually write anything back, even if it is just, you know, feedback between you and the athlete, that parent is aware of what you're saying to their child. And
yeah, and I think that's a really safe way of going about things too. It's because I think we've all seen like message chains that explode, in particular like group chats. You know, they come from a great place. They all get added into the same thing and all of a sudden someone's got an opinion on something which can escalate really quickly and those types of things. I know we had it with our girls last year. We had a group chat. We asked them, what do you want? Do you want WhatsApp? Do you want iMessage? And a couple of them were, oh, we prefer Snapchat. And it's like, no, we are absolutely not going down that path. I don't understand it for a start, but no, we're not doing that. And so we settled on iMessage, and it was myself, the assistant coach, and the team manager, and the girls. And there were a couple of times we had to sort of say, hey, that's maybe not appropriate for the group chat. Just be mindful of this is to let me know if you're running late for something. It just removes a lot of doubt. And ambiguity in that space. Like, if someone's not coming, everyone knows that they're not coming.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And you may need to have a follow-up conversation somewhere else down the line about, hey, 5 minutes before practice is not the best time to let me know, but hey, at least you told me something rather than just not turning up altogether. So, and it's the same with social media. Obviously, you shouldn't really be having kids underage on your social media accounts with you.
Yeah.
That's just a really basic thing. You know, your social media is your thing and it's their thing. It shouldn't cross over in that space. It is something to be really careful of in that space. The change rooms and the overnight stays, similar deal. Like, make sure the association, like if it's an overnight stay, obviously make sure the association is aware of it. It's been covered off. You've got a good ratio of parents to children as well. Those types of things. Get permission. Like, it's, again, common sense stuff, but kind of has to be done.
Yeah, and there's really clear, like, so in the child safeguarding policy, there's really clear guidelines about, the way that you set up your overnight, you know, if you're going away for a competition, the way you set that up and the behaviour, the expected behaviour while you're on it. And, and you can always, like, so I have associations email me all the time, you know, asking questions about that, and that's fine. That's what we want. Yeah,
absolutely.
We want them to be open conversations about how to keep kids safe.
Yeah, exactly. And similar with change rooms, just making sure they are change rooms. So as a coach, you don't need to be in there unless you're giving like a pre-game chat or a post-game chat or something like that. Being really mindful as to who's in there, when they're in there, are they getting changed, those types of things. Like, I know there have been times where I've been assisting a women's team and the last place I want to be is in the change room. Yeah. So I would always have one of the female coaches say, okay, am I good to come in or not good to come? Like, you let me know when it is. Those types of things are just a really easy way of just, again, setting out some expectations. So you might be, like, I know there are teams on a Friday night that will take their team into a change room before the game, and it might be there is an expectation that when you arrive at the venue, you don't need to get changed.
Yes.
So you have to be in your playing uniform and all that sort of stuff. If you want to change shoes, that's fine. Like, yeah, we know kids get a little bit precious about wearing indoor shoes outdoors. It's a big thing for them. Yeah. So, okay, that's acceptable. That's not a problem at all. But the actual, like, singlet shorts, those types of things, don't be changing them in the change room. You should be in those already. So the coach knows that they can come in and go out and those types of things. And, again, making sure you're not one-on-one with a player in there. Yeah. Like, it's... if you need to have a chat with someone, bring the assistant coach, bring the parent, whatever the case, team manager, those types of things is just a cleaner way of doing things.
And the other thing is, if, you know, you've got a female team or even a male team, you know, because you don't know who has body image issues and, you know, that kind of thing. So if you are asking teams to swap their even their singlet to the opposite colour, you know, getting them to go to the change room, don't do it, you know, on the side of the court so that everyone can see.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something I think that gets forgotten about a lot because we live in the world of reversible singlets and we need teams and it's like, oh, you guys just change. And, you know, I remember growing up, it was like, well, we didn't have reversible singlet. Like, I've aged myself out of this thing completely. Yeah, yeah. But it was like, oh, well, we go shirts and skins. And it's just what you did, you know, 25-ish years ago. Obviously, we're not doing that now. We've come a long way since then, it turns out, which is a good thing. But it's those types of things. Like, I know... with the girls I had last year, any time we had to have them change singlets, it was difficult for them to go all the way out to the bathroom and then come all the way back. So it was like, well, okay, you guys get changed, I'll turn my back and either look at my session plan or look down the other end of the court, just so they don't have that uncomfortable feeling of who's watching and those types of things. Like, I wanted to try and take that away from them as best I possibly could.
Or asking them to wear t-shirts under.
Definitely.
Or, you know, just spending that minute running to the change rooms and doing it there.
And I know we've done it with some state teams in the past. We'd tell players before they got there, you need to be in blue or you need to be in white, so that when they get there, yes, they may need to change it at some point. If someone gets injured and you have to change teams around, that's okay. Like, it does happen. But just trying to take as much of that away from it as possible. And it does require a little bit more planning and organisation from the coach's end, but that's actually okay too. Like, if it keeps you a little bit more accountable, well, that's not a problem.
Yeah, and make everyone feel comfortable and safe.
Yep, definitely. Yeah. What about, I don't know, this is a difficult area to touch on, the video and the photography and those types of things. So who owns the footage? Are you allowed to take videos? Are you allowed to take photos? Like, I watched on a Friday night, there are people wandering around with cameras everywhere. Some of them work for BV, to be fair. So, you know, it's expected. Some of them are a part of a club or association, those types of things. What do we have to be really mindful of in that space?
Yeah, you need to be mindful about where you store the footage and for how long. So only store the footage for as long as you need it. So if you're videoing the game so that you can watch it back as a coach, watch it back, delete it.
Yep.
You know, as soon as you don't need footage or photos, delete it.
And that's,
make sure that it's stored in a way that, you know, isn't going to be accessed by other people.
So that might be if you upload it to YouTube. Like, I know we've had team managers in the past where they've filmed the game, they upload it to YouTube. Make it unlisted. Like, make sure nobody else is getting that link. Those types of things are a better way of getting it done rather than it just being out there on the internet where anyone can go and see it. That's not what we're after. And I know there are plenty of platforms like Huddle and those types of things that have it securely stored away, but just making sure that it is used in the for what it's supposed to be used for, which is teaching and feedback and those types of things. Yep. That's an important part of it. Is there anything I haven't covered off on that I thought I was supposed to that I've kind of missed?
No, I think the only thing that I wanted to talk about was, including families in, you know, all of your interactions and making sure that they feel comfortable to come to you. And I don't mean that, you know, you want every single parent that has every, you know, like every little complaint coming to you. But, you know, when it matters, you want children and young people and their families to be able to come to you and, you know, discuss concerns.
And I think part of that is, in all honesty, just asking the players. Like, okay, is this... if we were to do an overnight stay somewhere, is there something you'd be comfortable with? And not have them answer that in a group, like, because obviously they'll get peer pressured into, if nine people say yes and one person says no, they're going to end up saying yes because they don't want to be that one person. So asking them that privately, like, how would you like this to happen in the future? Is there something you would like done in this space? But having that open dialogue, I think, is a really important part of it. And giving, you know, the kids a say in what it looks like. Like, do you believe that we need to be here an hour before the game in those types? And then kids might sit there and say, nah, it's too long. Like, I don't want to be hanging around a stadium for an hour before I actually have to play the game. It's like, well, I've got to get from one side of Melbourne to the other side of Melbourne. You may have to, just traffic reasons, it might have to happen. But at least giving them a voice in that space and actioning on it. Like, and there are they'll inevitably be some things that they say, oh, we should do this, that just logistically can't happen. At least giving them that opportunity to voice some concerns or some opinions or thoughts or whatever the case may be, I think is a healthy thing.
Yeah. And the other thing is making sure it's fun.
Yep. Yeah. And that shouldn't be forgotten. Like, no. You know, I understand this is a difficult topic at times for a lot of people to talk about, and there will be some people that sort of roll the eyes potentially at a couple of things that we've spoken about, but this is actually about keeping you as the coach and the players safe.
Yeah.
And that's what we want. We want it to be fun because we want as many kids in the sport as possible because it's accessible, it's enjoyable for them, those types of things. This is not about we're going to try and make it harder for everyone. This is... we're going to try and make things as good as it possibly can be so that everyone can play the sport that wants to play the sport.
Yeah. And in the long run, it should make it easier for people.
Yep.
Because, you know, if you have all these things in place and you keep to them and, you know, you have happy families, happy children, you know, people want to play basketball. It
does make life easier, it turns out.
It does.
it solves a lot of problems before they start. Everyone's on the same page from the get-go. They know what's expected. They know what can be done, what can't be done, those types of things. So I think it's actually a really healthy place. So just before we wrap up the podcast, is there any other sort of final messages that you want to give to coaches out in the landscape out there?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank all the coaches that are doing the right thing, because there's a lot of coaches that, you know, bring that passion and, you know, really encourage kids and build their self-esteem and, you know, through learning new skills and, having fun at basketball. And also just to mention that sometimes, you know, discussing child safeguarding and child abuse can be quite triggering for people. So if, you know, you're feeling distressed after listening to the podcast, just reach out to, you know, a trusted colleague or friend or, you know, places like Lifeline and things like that.
Yeah, and it's a really valuable part of that as well, because it is obviously we don't want anyone walking away from the sport and those types of things. And people that volunteer their time are really important to just the foundations of the sport as a whole. So I think it's a really valuable message. And the more people we have doing the right thing, obviously it is a lot easier to stop people from doing the wrong thing. They see standards and they see, okay, this is how that coach acts and this is what's acceptable. Like, you've got to be a good role model. Yes. In that space too. And sometimes that's easier said than done, for sure. But it is one of those things where if you do the wrong thing and a coach sees that and they think, oh, that's acceptable to do, well, they're going to probably copy that.
Yes, yeah, so. And it's up to adults, isn't it? You know, if you see something, then say something, because, you know, that's what's going to protect kids.
Sarah, I'll drop all your details in the description of this as well. So if anybody does have any more questions, please do let Sarah know. She's a great resource that we have at Basketball Victoria that can at least help you out and point you in the right direction with what can and can't happen and what the policy looks like and how it will be updated as well. And there'll be the link, obviously, to that on the website as well, which I do recommend that all coaches have a little bit of a look at. I know they have to do their stat decks and working with children checks and those types of things, but this will obviously be another part of it. And talking to the Basketball Australia crew, that's something that they're really mindful of as well, that, you know, there potentially will be some e-learning that goes along with this to at least help coaches out to just know what they should and shouldn't be doing, what best practice looks like. And I think that's the big thing that we really want to get out of this. So, Sarah, thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate you jumping in.
Thank you for having me.
No problems at all. Coaches, that wraps us up for this week. We'll catch everyone next week on the Talking Split podcast. Love. Tune in, enjoy the tribe.